How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Good. A tree fell on my neighbor or my nephew's house.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like a whole tree.
Uh-huh.
And it fell on a whole house.
How'd that go for the who won, the tree or the house?
The tree always wins. It's like, don't go for the tie. So I spent the day putting tarps on a roof.
For the one tree?
Well, it was a big tree. It's like a tree that's been around for many a year, as they say here in these parts. And then it said, house, hug me. I'm coming in. Coming in for a big old hug.
You out there with the chainsaw?
Out there with the chainsaw. Yeah. Oh, people shouldn't let me have a chainsaw. How about you? What do you got to compare to that?
I cannot touch that. Although my wife bought a mini chainsaw. Like, it's like adorably tiny.
Like a little teeny tiny one?
For like blackberry bramble cutting. And okay. Yeah, I mean, the chainsaw part of it is like, I don't know, 7 or 8 inches long. It's adorable. It's rechargeable. It goes, meow, meow. But those blackberry brambles, they do not stand a chance.
Not a chance. No. Not a chance.
Welcome to Cutting It Up, the Chainsaw Podcast.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
When I was at university for my first degree, 2000 years ago, at Western, University of Western Ontario, I was referred to as Chainsaw.
Really?
That was what everybody called me.
Is that
everybody
like one of those nicknames that you like gave yourself?
No. One does not give oneself Chainsaw as a nickname. But yes, I was referred to as Chainsaw because super into horror movies. But separate from that, some dude one time walked up to me, drunk frat guy, and said, "Chainsaw, I caught you in The Running Man." He meant to say Buzzsaw because that's the character in The Running Man, but Chainsaw just stuck. And so I became Chainsaw because some drunken frat guy called me that. And then I went by that for ages. I remember being in a mall or something like that once, and some people I had known from university after I was no longer at that one came running up to me and said, "Oh, Chainsaw!" And my mom was with me, and she was not pleased that having giving me the name of Carrington all those years ago, that for some reason I decided to go as Chainsaw instead. So I've been a disappointment all around. So the Carrington Vista story.
I've never been known as Chainsaw. I have never used a chainsaw, and the world is probably better and safer for that. Hey, I can see you now. There you are.
I just realized my camera wasn't on. I was hiding from you. I've unhidden myself.
I described to the listener, I can now see Carrington. He is as bald as ever, as smiley as ever. He has AirPods in his ears.
And old,
a gray shirt and a couch and the chair that we have discussed.
The chair and the turntable, which I love. It's the 1970s behind me, basically. And I dig it.
Nice.
Yep.
Awesome. We rarely, in the olden days, we would go a month or two without talking to each other. And now we're playing these random games made by random people and we're just knocking them out.
Because we're so good at games now. That's what it is. It's that's not right. That they're short games. It's just that we're excellent. We did get good. Yes. So games. We played a pair of games, but we didn't play the game that we originally said we were going to play. But I think in the last episode, we inserted a bit of audio, giving people a heads up that things were going to change.
Right. Yeah. We said we were going to play Their Angelical Understanding, which is a Twine game. And then that game took like an hour.
At most.
In fact, I played it twice, which we'll discuss it later. So we decided that wasn't enough for a full episode.
Not for you, dear listener. We got to give you more than that.
More content, more quality content.
Get your money's worth.
That's right. Yeah. And this, so then after we played their Angelical Understanding, we played another Twine game called 16 Ways to Kill a Vampire at McDonald's.
Great title.
Great title.
Just a truly great cut. Great.
So, and those are both, so we played two. It's an all Twine all the time.
So, it is indeed. You're on Twine FM.
So that's what we ended up doing, and then we have to figure out what we're doing next time because we have a whole bevy of options, really. But and the
optional
the game,
bevies.
Yeah, a whole bevy. So, yeah, should we look at the mail?
Yeah, mail. We should have a stinger for that. Mail or something. Mail.
Some listener, make us a stinger.
Yeah. Ouch.
Saxon stacks of letters.
Stacks.
Letters.
Voter wrote in. He's written in before to say, hi, guys. If there are leaves. Oh, because I talked about counting the leaves in. What game did I count the leaves in? I count the leaves in something recently.
Something we played.
Wasn't.
No, it was the meteor, the stone, and the
Trigger? Oh, that's it. Yeah, count to the leaves. And it said, anyway, yeah. Voter says, if there are leaves, I will always count leaves. It's a Zork homage, but in Zork, the magic number is 69,105, whereas in Sherbet, that's it, has 16,339. And I am told, I have not played it yet, mostly through lack of time. Anyway, that was good. Oh, and he said, and on Zizzy, who was the king that was the son of Darius? Were we talking about that? No, Zizzy wasn't the king with son of Darius. That was Xerxes. It's the king Xerxes the Great, not Zizzy. You know, Kay, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about. You're a totally different plane than me right now.
I'm diving into the classics. So the Darius was one of the crown princes of the Persian Empire. I do not know why I know this stuff. Weird things rattle my memory. So this is like 6th century and 5th century BC stuff. And so there's the King of Kings. So there's,
is that when you were in college?
Yes, that was when I was getting my second degree. Yes. Cyrus the Great, then Cambyses the Second, something like that. And then there's the really controversial guy, Bardia, and then Darius, and then Xerxes.
Why is he controversial?
He's controversial because he's got Cyrus, who's like the first big one, kind of like the first major king of the Persian Empire. And he dies, and his son, Cambyses, something like that, the second, becomes the new king. And then 5 years or so before, or maybe 8 years before he stops being king, because, you know, the only way to stop being king is you're dead, he gets jealous of his brother. I think it's his brother who's Bardia. And supposedly, I mean, later on, people think that this is what happened. He kills him. He's like, screw you, I'm jealous, you're dead.
Yeah.
But Cambyses is off, like, fighting a war. And word doesn't kind of get out that this guy's dead. And so then the king dies, and some people involved in the murder say, I've got a cousin who looks just like that guy. And they just like say it's him. And everyone just starts to refer to him as, and he becomes the king of the Persian Empire just because he's like Joe Schmo down the street who looks like the guy who was murdered, because you don't really encounter kings a lot. So you can kind of get away with it. It gets away with it like for 8 years.
It's like a movie plot. In fact, I literally think there's a movie plot.
I suspect there's been lots of movies. More fun is the next one. Yeah. One of my favorite ways a person has ever becomes a monarch. I mean, Queen Elizabeth II is fun because she's up in a tree when she finds out. But Darius is the best of them all. Him and like eight people, who I think some wish were probably involved in that first murder, decide one of us should be king. And how will we determine which one? We'll all get on our horses and we'll stand facing the sun up before dawn. And when the sun comes up, the first one whose horse neighs, that's the way we'll know that person will be king. So Darius's groom, supposedly on his own, but I suspect Darius told him to do this, grabs the genitals of another horse and gets it all. This is the story. Gets it all over his hand. And then when the sun comes up, rubs his hand in the horse's nose to make the horse neigh. And that's how Darius becomes the king of like the largest empire that humanity has ever seen. Because his groom grabbed horse genitals. Huh.
I'm not sure that's worth it. I mean, is that really worth the cost?
No, man. Old stories are very strange. So how? Okay, we've gone chainsaws, and now we've gone Persian Empire. So that's what people tune in for. I'm derailing the show hardcore.
David Schmidt sent us an email.
Oh, right. Mail. We were doing mail. That's what we were doing.
Yes, with the subject line, multimedia! Exclamation point. longtime listener, first-time emailer. I love the podcast. You've inspired me to go back and play some of the classics. Which I think is the goal. Yay.
Sure, yay. I agree.
Yay for
yay.
That.
Yay for David.
Go back and play the classics. Yay, David Schmidt. And perhaps try some of the newer Tex Adventures. I just listened to the Secret of Monkey Island episode, up to the spoiler horn, because I now want to play it. Is it a spoiler horn? Have we ever called it a horn?
Spoiler. I think spoiler horn is what we probably ripped off the idea. I think spoiler horn is what's on the Incomparable network shows. That was called a spoiler horn because they actually play a horn. All we do is say, hey, spoiler fence.
Oh, we need a horn then. When we go full multimedia, we need a male stinger. And also, just to be fair, a female and a gender neutral stinger.
That you can rub in a horse's nose.
Oh, yike. And then we need a spoiler horn.
A spoiler fence. You got to play the sound of a balustrade, whatever that is, right. To wind whistling through one.
I was reading a letter.
You were reading a letter.
Up to the spoiler horn, because now I want to play it before listening to the rest. The addition of the music was a great enhancement to the podcast. It was nice to hear all of those sound variations. Please do more multimedia titles in the future.
I agree. I think there's two problems with the idea. One, and this isn't a problem for me, but maybe a problem for you. You did all the work. I don't think people realize we didn't edit those in later. You just on the fly live just played that stuff so I could hear it. And it was totally seamless and it was amazing. But it's a bunch of work that you did. Yay. But two, I think we mostly do text adventures. So yeah. There's not a lot of media to multiply.
That's true. Multiply the media. Although there was sound in something we played.
The first of the games, the one about angels.
Yeah, the bad angels. I'll make a note to talk about the sound. I thought it was just like, it was like playing a looped wave file at me and I was not impressed. So yes, but if you want to hear that sound, it will not be included in this episode.
that'll show you, David.
Yeah, David, thanks.
We got a pair of emails. For the longest time, I railed against the dropping of the hyphen in email. So, you know, what do I know? I've died on a lot of wrong hills.
I'm still mad that we're not capitalizing internet anymore.
Right, because there's the one, and we mean it's that one.
Yeah.
Yep, there are internets, and then there's the internet. Yep, right. There's the Canada and stuff. Smarter Than Us, Karen Hales told us, she wrote in to say, hey, Kate and Carrington, you mentioned that Everybody Dies seems to have a bug, and that's why we're playing other games this week. Everybody Dies seems to have a bug, but I remember playing it a couple years ago. I double-checked, and it works on the Spatterlight interpreter, which runs on macOS. I was able to open the game today. There might have been a couple of minor glitches within the game, if I remember right, but I'm pretty sure I got through it anyway. I'm using a 2022 version of Spatterlight and the original .gblorb story file. I hope you'll be able to play it, after all, at least at some point. And similarly, Nathan wrote to say, thanks for the continuing podcast, guys. For once, I'm not crossing the spoiler fence. I was disappointed to hear about your trouble with Everybody Dies. I always play Glux games in Gargoyle, which is a Windows and Unix thing. So I never have that kind of problem, but it turns out that the Scum VM will play it just fine too. So if you're still serious about playing Everybody Dies, you should give it a try in Scum VM. So
I had looks no like idea have, that... I didn't know that Scum VM could play Gblorb.
Gblorb.
So after we got the email from Karen, I went and got Spatterlight or re-downloaded.
Which I think we talked about years ago. I think I re-downloaded Spatterlight.
Yeah. I'm on a different computer than I was then. And anyway, so it worked. It worked on my M1 laptop. It loaded the Everybody Dies. It showed me a picture, and then I stopped. So I guess we can play it now. I gotta say, before last time, I did my due diligence. I tried it on the online web-based version. I tried it in Lectrote. I tried two things. So
I'm not gonna judge because I tried it in the online version and didn't run. And then I heard that there was trouble with it running, and I just gave up and tried nothing else. So I did less diligence. I did undue diligence.
Control Z diligence.
Control Z. Sorry. This podcast, mister. Jeez. These parts, we said Zed.
Okay, so we... It, Do you want to decide? Do you want to go back now and play Everybody Dies for our next thing? Do you want to give it its...
Yeah, do it.
Okay, but if we can't make it work this time...
Is it a Twine game? It's not a Twine game.
It's not a Twine game.
Okay.
I think it's a Parsec game.
I think we should do it. I don't want to do... like I'm nothing against Twine, but I don't want to do like all Twine all the time.
No, I want...
So I say, let's just do it. We're just like, why not?
Now, our next game will be Everybody Dies, unless it doesn't work, in which case I'm out, giving up on it.
Right. That'll show you.
Right. Good. Good. We got an email from our friend Quinn.
Denies that.
Yes, she will deny that to her dying day, but she is our friend.
Yep.
She says, "Hey friends." See, she comes right out and says it. "Hey friends, normally I would give feedback on Twitter, but I left it, you know why, so I'm here instead. Luckily, I know someone who has your email addresses. That someone is me. Anyways, I was wondering if you ever thought about replaying one of the games you did before, then comparing notes again. Out of the blue, I got weirdly motivated to replay Thimbleweed Park and was surprised what a different experience it was the second time. Bearing in mind, my memory is terrible, so I literally only remembered a single puzzle. However, I think I enjoyed it more the second time, and I finished it, though with some liberal hint phone use in the middle out of impatience as anything. I think I experienced what you both talked about later in the Infocom set, that effect of getting better at games, even though that shouldn't be possible because all the games are different. You start to think that like the designers of the games do, and the puzzles fall together much more easily than you expect. I pretty much cruised through the whole game despite genuinely not remembering any of it. One exception was the wet toilet paper puzzle, which, oh, do I have thoughts about. F that puzzle. Anyways, that's all." I don't remember that puzzle at all.
I don't remember that puzzle either. I also don't remember if when we first started the show, we had a list of potential show titles. We picked Eaten by a Gru. Had we considered F that puzzle?
No, I don't think so.
That might have worked.
I think I like her idea, so I think that we should play Zork 1.
Oh,
next.
God. I'm sure you and Quinn will have a great time on that episode. I 100% would go back. I do want to go back and play some of the Infocom games. I know I would want to go back and revisit some of them. I'd want to revisit ones I remember liking, but I 100% will do that. I would do that even if we weren't doing it for the show. I'm sure I will go back at some point and replay some of the games.
This is Quinn's idea. I think we should force Quinn to replay that game that we played with her. What was the game? The game for women Plundered Hearts.
Plundered Hearts, which I still think has the best ending of every Infocom game. The alternative ending, but the alternate ending is the best ending of all the games. Nothing comes close. That's what I say.
Okay.
We can play the game.
I'm not arguing with you.
You shouldn't.
Okay.
I think that's all the feedback I have.
Okay.
Considering we recorded like 8 hours ago. I mean, how much can there be?
True. True.
Okay. True dat.
Dat. True dat.
One hundo P, famo.
Oh, and then Carrington had a stroke right here while we're recording the episode. It was sad.
Was it? Or was there great joy across the land? Who knows? No. We'll find out. Okay. So we played a pair of games. Do you want to talk about them in any particular order?
Let's talk about them in the order we played them.
Porpentine it is. So their Porpentine. Angelic Porpentine. Understanding by somebody named Porpentine, who is a very prolific game designer and does a bunch of other art and stuff as well. I played this one online at slimedaughter.com. What about you?
I also played it online. I think I just went to the IFDB thing and I hit the play online and it put me at monster xrafastar.monster. That's not a URL. It doesn't end in .com.
That's not a URL.
No, anyway. So I also played it online.
Me too. I was worried about playing games online, like it's not going to save my state or whatever. But this one's fine. This is such a short game; it is really a sit down and play it in one shot kind of game. Although I did play it in two shots, but you know, for most people, for people who are better at this than me, you can do it in one sitting.
Yes, yeah, and you played it online, and I'm not sure if it's an online thing or like a Twine thing, but these games, like neither of these games, like had saving. I mean, if you walked away and you came back, it would, I think, remember where you left off.
Yep.
But you can't like save a spot and like go back to it later. It's kind of a linear
experience. Which seems to imply it's impossible to get in a state where you would need to restore and try something different. So if you have a game where literally you cannot be in a Walking Dead state or anything like that, or wish you didn't get rid, then why do you need to save? It'll just keep playing. Anytime you want, you could just start again. Otherwise, just play. So probably it's indicative of something pretty fundamentally good at the heart of Twine games, in that you don't have to worry about save games.
So Twine is what is Twine? Twine is a system for making and playing games. Let's see, it's an open source tool for telling interactive non-linear stories, and basically it publishes to HTML, so you can put the stuff up on the web, and it is more of a point and clicky thing than a parsery thing.
I think of it as more choose your own adventure. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that, although it's not always, in fact it often seems to be not the case that you're at a point where you're branching. It's more, especially in this game, you can just click on things and it expands it out a bit, or adds to a paragraph, or changes things, or lets you make a couple of choices before you move on. But it's like a bunch of text comes on screen. Some of it is colored a different way. Kind of, it's hyperlinks essentially, and you click on those links to do stuff, to maybe pick up things, but mostly just to read a bit more. If it says, you pick up the blue cup, and in this kind of game, blue might be highlighted, and you click on it, and it might say the overfull blue cup, or it might change it to a pink cup, or whatever. And that's kind of how this game gets played. I didn't realize at the time, maybe I don't even know, if this game and its fonts and colors and sounds are indicative of all Twine games, or were more unique to this game, because this was the first Twine game I ever played.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've
played a couple in the past. I think a few years ago I was doing the judging for one of the interactive fiction competitions.
Ooh.
And, well, anybody can do that. There's nothing special about it.
Apparently.
Right. Thanks. And I played a couple of Twine games then, and it's just a different experience. So, I mean, if you've been playing Zork and whatever, there's no parser. It's just like it's click. It feels very like 90s websites, you know, just like early. It's a point. You're looking at the website, you read some stuff, you click link, some, you know, stuff happens.
Neither of these games had under construction GIFs, though, at the bottom.
That's so true.
A little less 90s than that.
Right.
That they look like 90s websites is like has a lot of negative baggage to it, but I think correct negative baggage. There's also the idea, I think, that these are much more in line with the idea of interactive fiction, the way Infocom kept trying to pretend that they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And Infocom was just making text adventures and trying to shoehorn some plot in and say, no, we're fiction. Whereas these are really interactive fiction. This is a story. You're going to read the story. It's plotted out like an author, and it just has some branches or whatever. You can interact with the story as you go. But it is very much interactive fiction, not adventure game.
That's a good point.
It's a great point. Well made. There's music in this, like you said.
Yeah, I tended to turn it off.
Wind chimes, baby. I eventually muted my speakers.
Yeah, I did too. There's little, it felt like looping wave files of whatever, wind chimes or, I don't know. I just shut it off, frankly. I wanted to read and not be distracted, and my dog didn't like the sound, and so... Did you?
There's a review for the box. My dog didn't like the sound. K7.
So it sounds like
you didn't
feel like the sound added a lot to it either.
No, I listened to it for quite a bit with the idea that maybe it's important. With any game, if they include a thing, I'm thinking maybe this is going to matter. Like the wind chimes will suddenly start to play something in a pattern that will be important for me to know, or they'll go up in pitch, or if they stop, that means I should do something or not do something or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at some point, not too far into the game, I realized it's simply atmospheric. And right. I decided I wanted to listen to my own music instead, so I muted it.
Sure. Something I, not even specifically about this game, but something I find, for me, takes some getting used to about the Twine games, is when I click a link, there's words, and one of the words is in blue, or whatever. And you can it's clearly clickable. You don't really know what's going to happen. Sometimes you're making a choice, and it will take you to a different page where you have made a choice. Sometimes it adds text, like fills out the thought. It just kind of shoehorns in more information. Sometimes it's like a pop-up of more information. Or sometimes it changes the words. Like you can say, you know, you are eating a burrito, and you click burrito, and it says it's a taco, and you click taco, and I find that weird. You know, it's I find it just like it makes me hesitant to click anything because I don't know if like I'm making a choice or am I just changing a word or am I expanding, you know, so I don't know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I totally see where you're coming from. Yeah. That's a really good point. There isn't a way to indicate, hey, this is a link that's going to take you to another place from which there is no back button. Like there hopefully will be a link that says go back to like say the monastery or whatever, but maybe not. Maybe you're just moving on the game and you can't get back here. In both of these games, I didn't find it a problem. Like if I ever clicked on stuff and I went someplace else, I could get back or I could make changes or whatever. So I never got to the point where I got burned by that. But you're right. It seems to be inherent in the Twine system that there's no little symbol to say this is a movement link versus this is a just give you some more information link. No color coding, no symbols, no anything.
Right. And their Angelical Understanding had several, at least two different endings. And the only way to like try them all or both or whatever is to basically play through the whole game again to get there.
I didn't know that. I wonder which ending. I got one ending and thought I was just done with the game.
Ooh. We'll talk about that after the spoiler.
Yeah, defense. I guess I wasn't sure we'd have a post-spoiler defense part for this game. The next game, definitely. Yeah. Major spoilers for the next game. I thought maybe this game wouldn't even have a spoiler defense part. So, interesting. Which is going to suck for listeners, because then what if you want to listen to the spoilers for one but not the other? So too bad for you. I guess you hope that it comes in the right order.
Okay, so Their Angelical Understanding by Porpentine. Mm-hmm. The description about the story on IMDb, it says, I trained to fight angels in a monastery by the sea.
Which is the opening line and is a great opening line. Like probably my favorite part of the whole game is that line. That is a great opening line.
Yeah. And then it says, wear headphones, trigger warning, suicidal ideation, ableism, abuse, possible epilepsy trigger. Mm-hmm. So I played this game once. I didn't like it. I liked parts of it, but as a gestalt, I didn't love this game. And so I played it again like a week later to see if to give it, it only took an hour, you know, just so to give it another chance. And I felt like I understood it a little better, but I didn't understand everything. And I don't think I ultimately found it all that satisfying.
It is very much, I think, a work of poetry more than prose, although it's presented as prose. Mm-hmm. But in its use of metaphorical language, it's very much in the world of poetry. So I found, I want to say this nicely, like a lot of poetry written by people a lot younger than me, it's not necessarily accessible to me. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily means that people who write poetry are younger than me are bad poets. It just means maybe their language isn't accessible or whatever.
It's not for you.
Right. And this game is very much not for me. And that's why I, which isn't, you know, not everything's supposed to be for me. Took me a while to learn that. That's a lesson I learned, man, when I was a kid. Because look at my demographics. Everything was all about me. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm glad that it's not, and it shouldn't all be about me. In this game, I am 100% certain I'm not the target market or the target audience anyway for this game, for this piece of art, which is fine and good. And that doesn't mean that my reaction to it or my impressions of it or my review of it is invalid, but I do think anybody listening to my review of it should, you know, temper that with the knowledge that I am not the person who's supposed to be playing this thing.
Who is supposed to be playing it?
People who would be of an age or demographic that is still going to be creating zines, Tumblr posts, and being really excited about punk rock demo EPs. Mm-hmm. And I've aged out of that.
Sure.
And this is also something at its heart, when we look at its message, about trauma, like major trauma, like physical trauma, like sexual abuse kind of level trauma. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the midst of dealing with that and dealing with ideas of that, in particular ideas of like untouchable people who perpetrate that and the people who could have helped you that didn't, which is what this is kind of all about.
Yeah.
And so like I'm not of that world. So again, like I there's less for me to connect there. So
You're right about being like poetry. It was I wrote poetry, and also like it reminded me of like cyberpunk, like that William Gibson, Neil Stephenson sort of vibe of the 90s sci-fi cyberpunk books.
Sure.
Which, I don't know. I read some of those. I don't think it was ever really my thing. But it was like that, but like in poetry form. And certainly not, doesn't just like come out and say it. Just, you know, whatever it's saying. Right. It's very oblique. And scenes, various scenes happening linearly, but various scenes that you kind of have to piece together to figure out like what's happening. So I don't know.
There's a point in the game relatively early on. I don't think it's spoilery because it's just a thing you do. Where in the monastery, it says, we keep our faces in glass bottles so the angels can't see us. And then you can choose your face among the glass bottles, like by clicking on links to select your particular eyes and lips and nose. I picked purple eyes and a broken nose. And then once you take your bottle of your face, you now have your face. And it says, I wish I could take any bottle but my own. And so that message in the, I wish I could have, you know, any bottle but my own, that's an obvious metaphor. But the idea of I'm going to go now in the basement of the monastery and pick the bottle that is my face doesn't play out like that's not a thing that changes how the game is going to play out. And I'm not sure what the message was. I get the message of I wish it could be different than mine, but I don't get the message of what does it mean to have your face in a bottle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was not being, I don't think it was being metaphorical. I think in that game, it was literally people walking around the monastery without faces. Yeah.
And see, that's the thing. I don't know. I'm like, what was metaphor? What was real?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was inaccessible to me. So not inaccessible. Like I think I get the key message here. In fact, I wrote down, this is the key line. It says, the angel kept coming back and nobody said anything. That's the point of this game. It keeps about coming to terms with the trauma of abuse, but also dealing with the idea that some people who might have been in a position to help or lend aid or do something, friends or a counselor or whatever, they did not. And so you got the abuser, but you also have this person who essentially let you down in a way. An abuser doesn't let you down; they just abuse you. So and just, you know, That's the thing. It says later, it says the point is the human who sat in the next room and did nothing, and a lot of people did nothing, but one of them called themselves your friend. Like, that's what this game is exploring, like that mm-hmm. kind of idea. It's yeah. not a pleasant idea. It's not a pleasant thing at all. And that's not obtuse. That's not a thing that I can't understand. But a lot of the elements of the game and the things that are happening, I was like, okay, is this supposed to be metaphor? Is this not?
Does it matter?
I don't know. Maybe not. Again, it's not for me.
I thought the last scene was interesting. For as much as the game wasn't for me, I was like finally getting interested in the last scene where there's...
When they're playing the game? Where the
player basically confronts their abuser. Anyway, so that was an interesting part.
But are they confronting their abuser? Or are they confronting the friend who didn't help?
I don't know. Right. Oh, you're right. It could be. Yeah, I don't know.
I took it as that.
They confronted. You're right. You're probably right. But I don't know.
That's the thing, is I don't know that I understand it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's okay yeah. that I don't.
It's okay.
And there were some spelling errors and syntax errors and things, like small things. But that's the nature of self-published works. And you yeah. can only get so yeah. much editing and so a whole bunch yeah. of little things like that. But not a big deal. I didn't understand. There was... His hands flopping on the floor in the cottage.
I did not understand that at all.
Right? Like you could walk around, you could wait, and more hands would flop onto the floor. Like literally there's now hands on the floor. And I could yeah. shove the hands into a closet or the fireplace or the garbage disposal. But what the heck did any of that mean? Okay. I was hoping you would say like, okay, that was...
I don't know. I could,
like that was inaccessible to me completely.
One of a few things that I did okay. not understand. So, yeah. All right, except for the spoilery bit about the endings, I have nothing else to say about this game.
Try to see, what else do I got this pre-spoiler fence? Oh, I found a 2014 interview with Porpentine, and she says, the idea of being violated by an entity beyond reproach has informed a lot of my life. Imagine the despair of knowing your attacker is quote-unquote perfect, and no one will believe you or care. And I think that line is absolutely addressing like this game and the ideas of this game, so... I think, again, I think that's what this game is about. That's what I'm taking away from it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the game has a message that might really resonate with its intended target audience. I'm not that audience. And for me, like an old privileged dude, the best I could do was kind of meet it halfway and accept that this is a statement, like maybe even a cry for help or whatever, that from someone who's probably experienced trauma and those experiences and feelings are real. Like feelings are real. But it doesn't change the fact that like there's a certain aesthetic that goes hand in hand with juvenile angst. And it's unfortunate that juvenile has a negative connotation, but I don't know what other word to use. And it's like, it's the aesthetic of Tumblr posts and zines and such. And this mm-hmm. game has like the textual aesthetic of a Tumblr post. And I think as an old dude, that lessens its ability to make an authentic connection, because As a guy who was super into zines and punk stuff as a kid, what you don't realize as a kid is when you're making that authentic statement and it feels authentic as a kid, like this is the way the youth are talking their messages now. When you step away from that, you realize how necessarily artificial that is. That it has to be. Like we're like just this is the, you would look at a thing and go, oh, I see that's from 1992, and it just gets branded that way. And I think that artificiality in its aesthetic can distance the artist from the audience.
Alienates people in the audience who are not your audience.
Yeah, and I think I don't think you realize as a young person that it alienates your intended audience as well. You are necessarily mm-hmm. putting up barriers that you don't realize you're forcing yourself to communicate through things that are gonna muddle that communication, which you put you at a disadvantage. You're playing tennis with an intentionally higher net, and you have to kind of get through that as an artist to realize I would be better off and my audience and my art would be better served if I lowered that net, and everybody wins. So, but I also, what do I know? I'm an old dude. So
true.
No one should listen to me. That's what I say. That's what I say. And you should not take that seriously because I said it. I don't think I have more. I want to talk about the different endings, but I don't think I have more to say pre-spoiler fence on this.
Okay.
Would you recommend this game?
I cannot recommend this game. I think I did not particularly enjoy it, and honestly, I feel like if someone, I was not a person who was ever abused in this way, but I feel like if I was, I probably wouldn't want to play this game, even in that case.
Oh, yeah, good know? Point.
So yeah. I think that it would be too hard. So no, does not get the K thumbs up, but that's just me.
I'm with you on that as well. Like I didn't like it personally. Again, with all the qualifications that like doesn't matter whether I like it. I don't know that I would recommend it either. I mean, it's a short game. It's not a big commitment from an audience, and it did win an award. But I don't know. But just for me too, I'd be hesitant to actually recommend people to play it, which I feel very guilty saying. I feel very, my Canadian guilt is bubbling up now. I'm achieving maximum Canadian.
Sorry.
Shall we move on to the funny game?
Let's move on to the funny game. The funny game was 16 Ways to Kill a Vampire at McDonald's by Abigail Korfman. And this was also a Twine game. The description on the Interactive Fiction Database says, you're a vampire hunter on your night off. You're getting a manicure, seeing a movie, and eating fast food. But there's a vampire in this McDonald's. If you don't do something, then in 1 hour, it will eat the cashier. Published 2016, and won the 2016 Exizy Best Puzzle.
Oh, this game is so much fun.
So this game is fun.
Oh, yes.
I loved it.
I loved it as well.
I loved everything about it. Twine, I think, before we even get into the game, I thought Twine brought some really interesting differences to this game. And honestly, I don't know if this is a Twine thing, or I think this is probably a choice that Ms. Korfman made. It's super transparent. You can see all the options, even if you don't have the inventory to do the option. There might be an option that says, stab the vampire with a stake.
Right.
You don't have a stake yet, but it's there and it's grayed out. So you know it's a possibility in the future. And after you finish the first time, it shows you all 16 endings, all 16 ways to kill a vampire. It's listed. They're all grayed out. You haven't done it yet. So now the goal, I think, is to play the game and win the game 16 different ways. So there's this super transparency that you do not normally see in interactive fiction.
I saw the endings at the beginning and I was worried I spoiled it. Mm-hmm. One of my first notes is the menu gave me spoilers, because at the start of play I clicked on like the little menu to say, oh, what does the menu offer? And what it offers is endings, other games, or restart. And it's endings is, I'm like, endings? So I click on endings and it shows you found 0-16 endings, and it listed the endings. I'm like, oh no, I've been spoiled. But I didn't realize, no, I haven't been spoiled. This is part of it. I thought it worked so well. I thought the writing was great. I thought it was funny as heck. You have said a few times that it's really nice when a game lets you solve a puzzle in more than one way. Like you're playing an Infocom game and you're supposed to solve it a certain way, but you come up with your own creative way to solve it and it works. And that can be really, really rewarding. And this like maxes that out. You've got this, it's basically a game with one puzzle and you solve it a whole bunch of different creative ways, every way you can think of. And it's just, it's a absolute delight. It's a fast game. It's not a difficult game, I think, but it's a delightful game. I loved it beginning to end. Love this game.
Me too. And then after you finish the game, there's like after game fun as well,
right,
where you can like, yeah. So you're playing the game. You're playing the game as a woman named. I didn't write it down.
Oh, I guess I didn't write down either. Very much in the vein of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, except you're not Buffy. You're the person in the group that plays the bait most of the
time. She's the bait. And normally when she's working, it's her job to be there and have an awesome looking neck that is appealing to vampires, and her teammates or whatever, you know, workmates come in and actually do the vampire hunting. But, you know, she's on her night off. She's trying to chill out. She goes to McDonald's for a meal, and she senses that there's a vampire there. And what's she going to do? That's the game.
There's a line where it says, she's fighting the good fight, keeping drunk college students safe, one oversized undead mosquito at a time. Right. So good. Oh, I think this also had a great opening line. What was the opening line to this? It's really, really, really good. The very first line. Effing leeches are crawling all over this poor little town. It's great, great. Just grabs your opening. It's so, so good.
And you click crawling all over. It says, seriously, I can't show a neck in a bar without someone tall, dark, and anemic sidling up to me and staring at my breast to keep himself from ogling my jugular.
Oh, the writing is so good. It's just like, just delightful.
Abigail Korfman has a Twitter and a newsletter, and I signed up for all of it before I even finished this game. I'm just like, okay, you know, I'm in. You know, I want to know what else she's done. Right. So as I was saying, after you finish the game, there's some post game fun where you can read some data about vampires and from, you know, different mythologies and things, and then you can see the game from the perspective of the poor cashier. The cashier is a 17-year-old young woman who just doesn't know anything, and she's just, you know, working at her McDonald's, doing her thing, and she's trying to piece together what happened that night, and she is just like utterly confused by what she sees. And you can like take different paths through her eyes to see like what happened. Yeah. And either sometimes she sees like the vampire dying in front of her, getting killed in front of her eyes and turning into dust, and sometimes she doesn't see anything because the actual killing happens outside of the restaurant, right, in the alley outside. So she's just like, there's some weird people came in and they left, that was weird, and you know, and sometimes she's just like, and then I went to therapy for 10 years.
Oh, the whole game is also, it's not just like a fun puzzle with really creative ways to solve it. And maybe it's a Twine thing or whatever, but Abigail Korfman is just really good at this. But I love the fact that you have to replay this game over and over and over again. And like right at the beginning, it's like there's this skip intro. Like it doesn't force you to redo the things you don't want to redo. Right. And navigating is really easy because there's like four locations you can go to. And so it's really easy to jump around and to execute things and to do something. I never once felt frustrated when I would do something and it wouldn't quite work. I'm like, oh, wait, I should have done that other thing first at the door or whatever. So I have to dive back and do it. Because the whole game, you're starting at like 11 p.m. and at midnight, time is up. And that gives you like 15 moves or whatever. Like, so no matter what you do, it's such a short amount of moves. It's not at all frustrating to say, oh, wait, no, I should do that in the other order. Or let me try this one instead. Or let me try doing that to the toilet. Let me try getting into the kitchen early or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it just takes all the pain away from something like this that you're going to have to repeat, and just makes it fun to repeat the same puzzle over and over again. It's brilliantly executed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even when you knew something can be done a certain way. Like I personally had trouble in one of the endings was put a stake through the vampire's heart. So I knew it was possible, but actually figuring out like doing it was a good puzzle, you know, for me. Like, does it happen in the alley? Does it happen in the restaurant? Does it happen in the kitchen? How do you maneuver things so that it's possible? Because you need the right tool, which you can't get in all situations. You know, if you have to put your hair down but to get the tool. But then if you put your hair down, then you can't lure the vampire over in a certain way because your neck's not exposed anymore. So I wish this game was, yeah, I love this game.
I would do, you know, 38 more ways to kill a vampire. It's like, just, I don't know how many more ways it could be, but so well executed. I also had a couple of the puzzles stumped me, but it's not the kind of game you get stumped on for weeks. But yeah, there were two of them. Like there's one, I don't want to talk about, but there's one sort of ending and one very similar ending. I couldn't get the similar one. I knew I had to do it because it was one of the list of 16, mm-hmm. but I got 15 out of 16 and then I had to come back to it to solve the other one. But again, never got frustrated. I was happy to come back to it. It was delightful. Both games that we played today have in common that they are strictly and deeply into very traditional Christian mythology, and they don't waver from that in any way. So I thought it was interesting. I picked two games kind of at random, but they had a strong thematic tie together. And this is a straight ahead vampire thing. It's like, you know, vampires exist in this world, and symbols of Christianity will thwart them, as will the traditional things like stake through the heart or cut off its head or light it on fire or whatever. Like all the, it's all the usual vampire stuff.
Yeah.
So you don't, it's also common that if you're not into vampires, you won't need to know some obscure thing. Like, you're given the list of ways to kill, and they're all the things that you've seen your whole life in every vampire movie or TV show or whatever. Like, there's, which I think it's to the benefit of the game. So you're not spending time trying to come up with some obscure thing that you'll need hints on. It's just like, oh yeah, you know, you got to do this, figure out a way to do that thing that you know what to do, you just don't know how to do it, which is a great way to do a puzzle.
And I get say, I am not interested in vampire things. I have never been interested in vampire stories. I mean, I sat through Twilight with my kid when it in the theater when it came out, and I, you know, that's the last vampire thing that I've paid attention to, right? But this just drew me in, and it was fun, and it didn't take itself too seriously, and I love the humor, and so this is the first vampire thing I think I've truly enjoyed.
Yep. I like the fact that it had a menu. I like that it had an inventory system, like nice modern game touches for a really simple game. Had a great intro. They didn't have to repeat. I like that. Lots of funny, like, oh my gosh, the humor in this game, all through, so many things are funny. Things that they made in your inventory. One of the things you have in your inventory is a nice hairdo, and like, which is part of the game. Like, just like so many things. Mm-hmm. I liked the locations. Like, there, it was like the main McDonald's and then like a back room and an outside and an alley. And like, it had enough locations that you had to move around to solve some puzzles, but not so many that there was any need for mapping or whatever. You got basically four locations. I loved it. Just really, really, really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At one point, one of the options was to say to the vampire some ridiculous thing, and just like, you are dead and I banish you. You know, it was just some like long soliloquy to say to the vampire, and I clicked it, and the answer was, look, I know you're trying to get all the endings and you need to try all the weird options to do that, but seriously, I'm not saying that.
That was great. Like, okay. I mean, I can't recommend this game enough, though. I loved it beginning to end. I would love to play a sequel. I loved everything about this. I became an instant Abigail Korfman fan. I just thought this was a delightful game in all ways.
Mm-hmm. Same. Yes, and I would highly recommend that anyone listening to this podcast go play it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you get all 16 endings, it'll take 2 hours maximum. But even if you just do three endings, it'll take 15 minutes and you'll have fun and you'll be better for it.
Yeah. It's the kind of game, if you didn't get them all, like, whatever. Like, just kind of play it as long as you want. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get all of them because I was really having fun. But if you play the game and just said, oh, get the few that are just obvious to you, whatever, it's a delightful, to take a delightful break and play this game. Great. The game immediately charmed me, and I stayed charmed the whole way through. Mm-hmm. Highly, highly recommended.
Cool.
I think that's it. Mm-hmm. Except for spoiler fans, I want to talk about some of these particular puzzles because they're super fun.
Okay, great. All right, so for the next game, we've already decided we are going to once again try Everybody Dies by Jim Munro. And if it doesn't work this time, then we're playing Zork 1.
Everybody dies, but nobody plays.
And I don't know, if that's super short, then we might add a second game. We'll see, but we'll see how that goes. Anything else before the spoiler horn?
Nope. Oh, God. And now we're on the other side.
Okay.
Let's spoil
the other side.
So shall we deal with the their angelic understanding first? Because I've got less spoilery stuff to talk about for that.
Sure. Yeah. So it was the angels. I assumed that the whole thing with angels was just like some sort of metaphor for an untouchable person in maybe like a priest in any church or something who
yes.
someone with power who was abusing this.
Although planet. I think that can be more broad than that. I think from the point of a marginalized voice, like say you're a trans youth. Mm-hmm. A cisgendered 45-year-old straight white dude mm-hmm. would be an angel in this step because it has so much inherent privilege that it becomes a point of power. So I think that it's just that the angels are the untouchable, and that can be untouchable because they are a teacher or a coach or whatever, or they could be untouchable just because, you know, welcome to being in a demographic of privilege. But that kind of idea that compared to you, they are the untouchable mm-hmm. class.
Yeah. Okay.
And how terrible is it to be abused by somebody who is essentially untouchable? Like, what are you going to do about it? There's a helplessness that comes along with that. That's how I took it anyway. So we should talk about the endings, though, because apparently there's two. I thought I didn't know.
There's at least two. I only played through it twice. And like I said, you can't, like, save in order to, you know, try different things. So at the end of the game, the part that I was finally getting interested what you're playing this game.
The red tile game?
The red tile game.
That was the part I was interested in the most too.
Right. So basically this is played in a rundown casino, and basically you grab a red tile that's got like these tiles that have like spikes in them. You squeeze them and then it makes you bleed, and then you after all the force pins or whatever go into your hand, you put down the tile, and then your opponent does the same thing, and you do this back and forth until you forfeit or you bleed to death.
Right.
I mean, that's the game. And so I played through it twice, and the first time, I'm interested to know what you did.
Hmm.
The first time, you get to a point and the opponent forfeits, and you can. And the first time I do not accept your forfeit, and I kept playing, and I forced him to play until he died.
Okay. Didn't even occur to me to do that.
And then my character wasn't in great shape either. It was like on the floor, you know, anemic and whatever, but lived and got to punish the person that they were trying to confront and watch them, you know, die from blood loss. The second time I played, they said I forfeit the game, and then my character takes off the mask, reveals themselves, and accepts the forfeit, and then walks away.
That's what I did. I did the second one. It didn't even occur to me to say, "Screw you, we're playing until you drop."
I found it much more satisfying to kill the other guy.
Okay.
I mean, this person trained for a long time in order to be good at this game.
I guess my mindset was, you're at the point where now you're hanging on to this need for vengeance and this squeeze into these things. You're now doing damage to yourself. And I get that my character might in their heart say, I want this other person to pay. But like, you're making yourself pay. You have to let go of this tile because now you're just hurting yourself. Stop hurting yourself. You have to, like, they're bad, yes, but you got to focus on you, man. You got to, which is, you know, so easy for me to say, I guess. But yeah, it never even occurred to me to do anything else. I just like, yeah, stop playing the stupid game. Like, you win. Stop hurting yourself. That's interesting. Now, I didn't even think I could go back and play another. It didn't occur to me that there would be other endings.
But the thing, I mean, I had to play through the entire game again.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but I played through it again because I wanted to give the game a super fair shake. And
it's a short game. It's not like you're I got to go back and play a Zork game again. It's a small commitment.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I just accepted the forfeit, removed my mask.
Yeah.
That was it. Those are my notes. Spoiler note. Played the red tile game, accepted the forfeit, and removed my mask. That's the entirety of my spoiler notes.
Fair enough. But, okay. Angelical? I mean,
kill some vampires. Okay. So my first kill was with garlic. So I ate the garlic fries, and it said my breath was moderately garlicky. I'm like, oh, I know what that means in a game. So I'm like, or ate them again, like two or three more times until it said my bloodstream was full of garlic. I'm like, bring it, bite me. So I approached the vampire and let them intentionally bite me and dead vamp. I'm like, yes, this game is going to be fun. I like when you get asked if I want fries, and you click on fries, and then it adds the parenthetical, I do. Like, I do want fries. Right. So much fun.
I don't remember. I think my first playthrough, I actually managed to get myself killed. I just like went up and gave him a hug or something, without having had any fries or anything.
Right.
And I'm just like, that was not good. But that gives you like gentle hints about like.
And when you do die, which happened a bunch of times, it'll give like a death hint. Oh, you shouldn't go approach the vampire if you aren't ready or have, you know, something to ward them off. Or the vampire is stronger than you. If you're going to try to do that, you better have something planned. Or the vampire got away, you'll have to find a way to stop them from getting out the door. Or it gives you like a gentle hint anytime you die that you could do better if you tried something like this.
I liked there's a character that we haven't talked about yet, the homeless woman, Bess. Bess, who is in the alley outside the McDonald's, she's great. It's a great character.
Great character.
Yeah, and she is willing to, she's able to help you in a couple of different ways. Mm-hmm. She can give you a thing that is useful, or she can actually come in and
kill the vamp for you. Yep, banish
kill the vamp. Vampire
with the power of her faith, and she's got pamphlets and stuff like that. There is a point where you have to like correct a prayer, essentially.
Yeah.
So, like, the words choice wrong. Of prayers. I had to Google it. I had to Google it.
Oh,
so
sure.
I could hold up to Google. Okay. Well, and it would say, like, I'm like, this is the correct words. So you have to correct a bunch of words.
Right. It'd be like, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not need. And like, that word was clicked. And you can click need and it would change to want. And if you didn't click want again, it would change to
I shall not vacuum. I shall not whatever. Like, a bunch
of things. And you get the psalm right. But after you do it, you don't have to do it again.
Right. Next time, because Abigail has your back, man. Yeah. This is a person who knows what it's like to play games. It's such a delight to play a game by somebody who's clearly had the same frustrations in games we've all had. And I love that you don't have to do it. Like, you do it, if you go again, it says, oh, you already answered this one. You could just give her the same answer you gave last time. I'm like, thank you, Abigail. Like, just what a delightful game maker she is. I admire it so much.
Maybe my favorite like part of it, like the coup de grace at the end, was when we're doing the endings through the cashier.
Mm-hmm.
For some of them, it ends, you know, and I went to therapy for 10 years, and for some of them, it says, and then she becomes a vampire hunter.
Yes,
just like, I love it.
Yeah,
you know.
So good. So which, do you remember some of the ones, the kills that you got stuck on or that you found difficult?
Like I said, the stake, staking him with the stake was what was my last one. Cause I don't know, I tried to, because once you have the stake, you can't.
From the plunger in the bathroom.
From the plunger. Right, you break a plunger and you have a stick. Once you have that, you can't lure him outside because your neck is not available anymore. So you have to do it after he's gone into the back of the restaurant.
Yeah, so you have to wait, and get him like he's just about to bite the cashier.
And I think my very last two actually were the two that required the phone call. You phone a friend.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. So getting the head cut off once.
Right. You get the head cut off, and he can get shot with a blessed gun.
And both of those, you basically phone a friend and then agree to meet in the alley, and then you bring the vampire to the alley and basically just say, you know, go ahead and bite me or whatever, because you're going to get saved at the last minute by your buddies.
Right. And the other one I found tricky. I don't think I found those two outside ones tricky. I just those little happened to be the last ones I did. Right. The only one I found tricky was setting the place on fire. That was a more difficult puzzle, because you have some kindling, fine, but then,
and you try to use the kindling and I try to burn stuff, but it's not enough.
Right, it's not enough.
Even though you take a million, like when you go into the bathroom, you can take a paper towel. I say one paper towel, or take a million paper towels.
Yeah. And then you can get oil from the French fry machine.
But you can't do that until near the end of the game. So it becomes a little timing. Right. So you only got a little few timing. Moves.
Yeah. And then, but if you use like way too much oil, I think you just end up killing yourself.
I put the oil on the table, assuming that if I put it everywhere, right. It says, well, where do you want to put it?
No, if you put it everywhere, yeah, that's it. You put it everywhere, you're dead. Yeah. No, everywhere was a bad choice.
Yeah, I assumed.
But if you put it like just the table or just the counter, whatever the answer was, then you get a nice fire going, and then he dies. And I really like the part where what was my favorite, one of my favorites was you make it so he can't leave the restaurant
with the wreath
with holly on it. Yes. You put that on the door, even though it's like April or something. You put this old Christmas wreath on the outside of the door, and he can't go through the door with the wreath. And then you convince the cashier that he's a bad person who tried to trip you, and so because of the vampire rules, she sends him out of the restaurant.
So
He's been uninvited. So he can't leave, and I mean he has to leave because he's been uninvited, but he can't leave because he can't go through the door.
That's funny. For me, I didn't do the tripping one. I said that he said terrible things. Like I kind of lead him on a bit. Well, not lead him on. I just flirt with him. And then when he said, let's go outside, I say, no, I don't want to. And then he's like really terrible and calls me a crappy name. And so I go up to the cashier and say, like, he said something really inappropriate to me. He did this. And she's like, what? Okay, I'm going to kick him out. So I did that versus the tripping.
Yeah. Huh. So I think when I tried, he said terrible things to me. The cashier was like, you haven't talked to him.
You do have to talk to him.
Okay, I missed time to that. So that's why I tried the tripping next and that worked. So.
The one of the ones that tripped me up was like vampires, running water is bad for vampires.
I didn't know that.
Can they just not touch water? Well, at all? Earliest ones, they just couldn't cross running water. But in some things, and in this game, it's like running water will just like kill them. Lots of things kill this vampire. I figured the running water, I can like get the sink to overflow or the toilet to overflow. So I kind of figured that out, but I couldn't. I kept assuming I was just going to make running water that would make him want to flee. I'd flood the place, so he'd want to flee the McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to put the wreath on the door for the same reason, like with the fire, like you or did like that's how you prevent the vampire from being able to leave. Otherwise, he just gets away sometimes. So I kept assuming I have to use the million paper towels to clog the toilet. But you actually have to clog the toilet with the wreath. You shove the wreath in there and then the paper towels. Then it will overflow and let the water come out but not go back in. And then it just kind of traps the vampire and then it slowly creeps up on him while you sit at your booth making faces at him. And then the water finally touches him and kills him while you're making faces the whole time, which is delightful. So that one took me a while because I kept thinking I can't use the wreath to plug the toilet. And I finally just did because there's only so much in your inventory. Mm-hmm. Speaking of inventory, like I said, I like the fact that one of your inventory items is a pretty hairdo, but then you take the bobby pins out and you can use that to pick the lock on the cabinet, which is great.
But then your inventory item is still a pretty hairdo. It's just like your hair is down and it still works for you.
Yeah, it still works for you, but now you have bobby pins and you can be a master thief. I like when you get the wreath, it says like, got Christmas, like you got the Christmas thing. And then when you look at the wreath, it's like this. And then this is fa-la-la. It's just like so many great little just jokes and wonderfully written things. And the whole game is such a delight. The one that stumped me the longest, the one that I got stuck on, I think, in fact, I'm sure it was my last one, was to remove the vampire's head, like in any way you can't, and I'd already done the get the vampire's head cut off. Because when you phone your friend, it says like this friend with a machete. I'm like, well, that tells me how to get the vampire's head cut off. That'll be easy. Yeah. And I had to click on the little hint for the puzzle, which said like, you know, get really, really angry. And so I had done the thing where you talk to the vampire and he ends up calling you a name and being really crappy to you. And it says, now you really want to kill him. So I said, okay, there's my anger. But I kept thinking like, how do I kill this vampire? And so, and it turns out what you got to do is go into the kitchen and basically let the cashier get bitten. And at that point you can grab the fire extinguisher and just basically beat the vampire to death and smush his head. But I really resisted getting to that point because I thought, well, if he bites the cashier, I'm going to lose. Mm-hmm. But she's bleeding, but still alive. So you really got to do it at like the exact right move. So that was the one that took me the longest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reticent to let her get bit at all. I mean, it's just, yeah. And also in the same thing, in the alley, like your friend isn't going to come shoot or machete the vampire until you like he's doing the biting, and yep. You know, so it's like, that's
gotta just let it happen. Hope you set up things so you can get straws, you can make them little crosses, you get the pamphlet things. There's a bucket in the garbage bin, and you got to get the duct tape to seal it up. And so at one point you can, like, that's how you fill it with the fry oil to mm-hmm. make a fire if you want, or you can also splash the vampire with fry oil, then throw your Zippo lighter on him to light him on fire. Like, just so many great creative ways to kill this vampire and basically traumatize the poor cashier. it's such a delightful game. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Me too.
Yep. Cool. I think that's all the notes I have. Just notes of
me too.
Just big love for the game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Oh, I want more of that game.
Okay.
I want a really long game by this author.
She does have other games. I don't know anything about them.
But we should. Hopefully, some are on our list. Our little list of games to play.
I will look into that. I will make sure. I'll add them.
Add them all. Cool. What if we're disappointed? What if the rest of the games suck? Don't let me down, Abigail. I guess that's it for now. Okay, so this has been Eaten by Gru, the interactive fiction podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback at gru@monsterfeet.com or hit us up for now on Twitter. He is at K Savitz. I am at Carrington. Who knows for how long? If you want to help other people find the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you gave us a nice review on iTunes. That would be swell of you. And the show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for being such an angel and letting us use his song as our theme tune. Next up, Everybody Dies, you know, eventually, supposedly, by Jim Monroe. And that's it for the show, folks. Thanks for podcasting with me, Kay.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
I'll stick you in the alley.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Like I said, I liked the how transparent it was. I mean, can you imagine if the infocom was just like, here's all the ways to solve the puzzle with the bat and the maze, you know, whatever. It'd make the game a lot faster, at least.
I like that it was a short game too. It was bite sized.
How very droll!
Oh, droll.